This year we're in my first section last month.
First one, about it's Hashem. So we need the first one. The first one. Show of hands, the first one. Only two. We have a quick review. We have a quick share tonight, but a quick review. We took a look at a Gemara in Shabbos. These are not in your sources. Normally we're going to follow the sources, but we just need an introduction. The Gemara in Shabbos on Chaf Aleph, Lamed Aleph, excuse me. Rabbah says, we don't really know much about the other side. We don't know much about Olam Haba. We don't know much about our final accounting. We're not obsessed with the next world. We are people of this world. We serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu as best as we can. We trust that the next world will fall into place. Chazal have a very, very powerful statement. Hayom la'selsam. Today we do mitzvahs. Macha l'kabel scharim. Tomorrow we worry about schar. We don't worry. We're not obsessed with schar and virgins and ice cream. It's not our thing. We're not holding up, I'm going to commit suichas. We do our mitzvahs. We live, we breathe, we have koch. We do as much mitzvahs as we can. As much mais and tovim, as much talmud Torah, as much chasid. But Rabbah gives us a little peephole, a little understanding of what's waiting for us on the other side. B'shar shem machnisim adam ladin, Rabbah says when they call you into that final din, so they ask you about ethics, first question, you're not a mensch, all your Torah is corrupt, you have to be good before you're frum. A lot of people jump right to the frum kind. How many halachas can I keep? How many chumras? Chumras are real cool. You know what makes chumras really cool? They can show them off and prance around to others, let everyone know how firm you are. Then it's really cool. Then you're a nazir. Nazir fixes the chumras that everyone will notice. Long hair, not going into cemeteries, not making kiddush. You want to be a machmer? Be machmer on lashon hara. You want to be a machmer? Be machmer on kibud av aim. You want to be a machmer? Be machmer on things no one can see. And that's the real chumra. How much money do people spend on their surrogate? $100? $200? How much money do people spend on maror? Can you imagine if we ate maror and shul? We'd be prancing around, well, look at my leaves. Ooh, I got a nice root. Well, look at the stems coming out. It's got that little green thing going up on top. My root takes your root any day, any week, baby. 24/7, I got you. That's right, I'll buy the cheapest lemon. You know, no one's watching. Sad, right? Everyone knows the big money in Israel comes because you want to prance around and shul, right? Very famous Rav Schechter story. Some of you have met Rav Schechter. Supposedly, Rav Schechter once walked into a store to buy his lulav and esrog. Oh my goodness, Rav Schechter's coming. Tell you what, he told his assistant. You stall him, throw him a few cold fish, throw him a couple of ugly esrogim, and I'll go back and find the nicest in 5 minutes. I'll come out and bring it to him. Okay, so you just stall him, I'll go back. Okay, so the guy goes back, he has his assistant stall Rav Schechter, and shows Rav Schechter like a stupid little esrog. I'll take it. He walks out. Every esrog came out on the market discussion. You can spend 100, you can spend 20, it's all kosher. It's nice to do here their mitzvah, but it's also great bittul Torah. Guys in yeshiva love it. It's like pyrotic bittul Torah. Look, best for here backwards. Then you take the money when you're give it to the tzedakah. You buy $20, so you give the other 80 to the tzedakah, so someone can eat those things. Tell a great story about the Rav. The Rav was once walking in Boston, behind the Talmud, his down the steps, and the guy's esrog like rolled out of his hand, down 15 flights of stairs, out the door, a piano fell on it, a garbage truck came rolling over it, and then there was an earthquake, and they dug it out, and the Rav says, I want to see that eslik.
Why?
I've never seen a puzzle eslik. I want to see a puzzle eslik. That's what has to happen, the piano, the anvil, the garbage truck, and the earthquake. So the first thing they'll ask you, are you a good guy, and that's just the first guy. Second thing they'll ask you, family. We talked about this a lot first section. You guys heard this coming out of your ears. You're nothing if you don't invest in your family first. A Jewish family is not 2.3 kids, 3.4 goldfish, 6.2 dogs, and 3.7 cars. That's an American family. Jewish families, I take account of my resources, money, emotion, marriage. What do I got? How much can I give? And you work hard. You work hard, age 20 to 50, you're not in the gym, you're not vacationing, you're on cruise ships, you're not getting nice cars, you're putting your kochos, your sleep, your energy, your effort into producing people, tachas kanfish. So the second question they'll ask is, at first is ethics, second I skip this Talmud Torah, it's the obvious. Can't be firm unless you learn Torah. Gotta ruffle some other feather. Maybe you haven't heard this from me yet. You are not a firm Jew unless you study Torah. Girls don't have to study Torah. Boys have to study Torah. You can't say, I keep 612, but I don't keep Shabbos. I keep 612, I don't keep Nevela. I keep Torah is a mitzvah. How much Torah you got to learn? That's where it starts to get, you know, I learn this much, I learn that much. Everyone can cut out there, but you got to make your peace with Talmud Torah. Kavati Talmud Torah. Your parents, keep telling them, do not have that challenge, because most of them did not have the exposure privileges you had to be in Yeshiva. Someone who's not in yeshiva does not have that upright. You're in yeshiva, guys, too late. You came on the kollel, it's all finished. You're going to have to answer that question in Shemayim, and you don't have any excuses. So the first question is ethics. Second question is Torah. Third question is family. Fourth question, CP solution. Were you part of Jewish history? It's not just a religion of ritual, of mitzvot, Torah, of chesed, of midos. It's a religion. Everyone was in history. Jewish people were given a unique historical challenge to live a unique historical trajectory, to reflect the Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence in this world, to bear the gospel of monotheism, to speak of a higher level and a higher grade and a higher consciousness. And that was born. When was Jewish history born? All you cheaters that heard me say the first part. When was Jewish history born? The birth of Jewish history? No. Where? Which mountain? When? There'll be foreigners in a strange land. They'll be persecuted. They'll be removed. They'll be expelled. They'll be inquisitor. They'll be holocausted. They'll be pogromed. People do not like messages, so they shoot the messenger. You don't like when your alarm clock or your cell phone rings in the morning, so you give it a big clap because you'd rather not listen to the message and hit the messenger. All of anti-Semitism is just a litany of people in a world unwilling to listen to our message. And if you're not willing to accept and to be attuned and to participate in Jewish history and the unique challenge and the march of being a Jew, and today's world, that's not just singing Ani Maamin at Sudash Lishut, but that's participating in some way, shape, or form. We're going to talk about this. This is the topic of our session. That is part of your frumkeit. That's not your Zionism, that's not your hashkafa, that's not your kippah. That's part of your frumkeit. A Jew participates in the world of ritual and in the world of history. And he serves HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai by performing 613 mitzvot, and at Har HaMoriah by accepting, embracing, and contributing to Jewish history. The Gemara in Sotah says, again, for those guys, this is a review. How many arks were there in the desert? How many arks led the Jewish people in the desert?
Two.
One ark? Aron HaKadosh. Shnei Ruchos HaBris. Sefer Torah. Kruvim. Ma'asei Elokim. Selchim Chanfei Malaporah. El Kaporis. Transcendent. Majestic, ornate, gold, water of Kodesh Baruch Hu, celestial, timeless, eternal. And what was the other ark? Who knows the other ark? What was in the other arum? What was in the other arum? No, it was in the first arum.
The
rattling bones of an ancient grandfather. Like Maran Selma Yerkimel says, people looked at the scene and were amazed, were startled. What do these two arks have in common? One is brilliant. One is on air, one is gold, one is transcendent, one is fire, black fire, white fire, timeless, eternal, immortal. And one is just a simple little coffin, the bones of a rattling grandfather. Why are they marching in tandem? What is Vayibin Sal Ha'aram V'yom Moshe the Aron Hashem? The other is just like a coffin. It's a promise. Answer is a Jew is led in his journey by two arks. There are two aronas of the Jew. One, the Aron of the Luchos, the Aron of the Torah, Talmud Torah, Shmiras HaMitzvos, Tikkun HaMidos, Tefillah, Chesed. And the other ark is the ark of Jewish history. Yosef HaTzadik was a pioneer of Jewish history. He stripped from his homeland at the tender age of 17. And he carved a path that each and every one of you has walked down, that you can not just survive in Galus, but thrive. He struggled with history. He bore the burden of history, of being unique, of being gunov, gunav, dinyi beis ha'ivrim. I'm a special person. I have a special historical calling. Gunov, gunav, dinyi beis ha'ivrim. It isn't popular. It isn't easy for him to stand in Paro's court and identify himself as a Jew. Gunov, gunav, dinyi beis ha'ivrim. Take me to Egypt. Throw me in jail. You can't strip me of my unique historical calling. And at each stage, that historical calling has a different consequence. At his stage, it's to feed the world, the greater Kiddush Hashem, and to spread the concept of monotheism slowly in Egypt. At our stage, it's different. But participation in the march of Jewish history is not a hashkafah, it's not Zionism, it's not your ideology, it is part of your frumkeit. It is who you are, it is the Torah you learn, the tefillah you daven. When I see a Jew who is completely dislocated from Jewish history, I don't care how much Torah he learns, how well his midos are, how long his Shemoneh Esrei is, I'm looking at half a Jew. I'm looking at a Jew who stands at one mountain and is completely oblivious to the other mountain. I'm looking at a Jew who marches to one ark and is completely ignorant of the other ark. And as I told the guys in the first session, the problem in Chutz La'aretz is because Limudei Kodesh is Torah, Gemara, Tanakh, Musar, Halacha, and then at 4:30 in the afternoon, Mrs. Greenberg comes in and teaches you Zionism. And the first change I would make if I were a principal in American high school, Limudei Kodesh would include whatever your shkaf is, but would include Jewish history. What is our responsibility in the year Tavshin Samaches, after the Holocaust, as Rebbe Shalom has turned the stage of history? Obviously something's afoot. History is accelerating. You're in this country. You're sitting here learning in Beit Meir. Your grandparents are looking down in Shemayim, crying and laughing. Jewish soldiers, Jewish uniforms, Frum soldiers, Yeshiva Bachram soldiers. I must be dreaming. For thousands of years, a uniform meant death. Torture, rape, pillage. Now a soldier wears a uniform with tzitzis on and davens on his Torah learned in Eretz Yisrael. You know what happened in every community, Tisha B'Av? Another week will be with Tisha B'Av. You know what happened in every community? People gathered around the one Jew, Mazedi told me, the one Jew in the small little shtetl who had maybe himself or knew someone who went to Israel and had like a little carving of the Kosel HaMarevi. Like a little carving they brought back. You know what the Tisha B'Av day was? They all surrounded him. Show us your carving. Show us. Show us what it looks like. 2,000 years. We forgot. We've suffered in a collective amnesia. We can't remember. Show us that carving. They would pass around this frayed little piece of paper. You have 2 minutes each. Pass it on to the next guy. They look at it. Shaking, say a kina, elit zion diareha, kimo isha b'tzireha. They'd be singing, crying, and looking, and imagining, and hoping, then walk out stuck on some godforsaken mountain in Eastern Europe with no history to change. A victim of history, not an author of history. Here you are, sitting in Beit Meir, and on Tisha B'Av, you won't be looking at a picture of the Kotel, you'll be walking up to those stones. 180 strong, 150 strong, with all the other people in Eretz Yisrael, 6 million. You know what that is? That is a tectonic shift in history. And with that tectonic shift in history comes corresponding shifts in our responsibility to respond to history. You're right, 200 years ago, Tzipisa Yeshua meant, I sing Ani Mamen, and I hope on Tisha B'Av that we'll one day get back to Yisrael. There's nothing else I can do. What can I do in frozen Russia? But now I can do something. Now it's not just a song, but an opportunity. That's not just a dream. But you can take actions. And this is what we're going to talk about this time. Start to talk about what's going on. I don't want anyone to think that this is any less important than the Tosfos you're learning in Makkel, so that this is part of your firm guy. We're not here to talk about Zionism. And it's not called Zionism. It's called Gulas Yisrael. And as you will see, the ability to open your mind and your heart. I'm not talking about whether you serve in the army or you don't serve in the army. I'm not talking about whether you move to Israel or you don't move to Israel. Those are complex questions. Those are difficult questions. They depend on ideology. They depend on practicality. Can you move? I'm talking about what's in your heart. Are you part of Israel? You don't have to live in Israel, but do you live Israel? Here, guys, you don't have to live in Israel. Do you live Israel? Do you live what's going on here as a religious calling, as part of your religious fabric, as part of your religious identity? Are you able to take Kevin, Rabbi Eliach, and fuse him to Rabbi Friedman? Does that make sense here? Am I talking your language now? Are you able to put them together, that one model of Frumkeit, not disparate voices. So let's start from the beginning. Let's start tonight, guys, with the password of Jewish history. Today I changed my internet. I got a new modem, Bezek. I have to enter my password. Passwords get you to places you couldn't go before. Redemption has a password, and you'll be surprised to learn its password. But once you know the password, then you understand the experience. V'espalel al Hashem, Yirmiyah stands in the ruins of Yerushalayim as it's ablaze, as Nebuchadnezzar has gathered his minions, his mercenaries, his Kastim, Paraglamid base. Source number one, page number one, Yerushalayim is about to fall. And sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks through the Navi's tongue, and sometimes he speaks through the Navi's actions, and today is the day for action. He tells Yirmiyah, I want you to buy land. Buy land and you shall buy it? There's no market because there's no price, like buying land in Fallujah. Anyone want to buy some land in Columbia? Don't recommend it. You think America's suffering a real estate fool? Try buying land in Fallujah or selling land in Fallujah. What? Come again? Buy land? It's ridiculous. It's absurd. I remember living in Gush Etzion, something you visited, during the Intifada. Not an easy time to live at work. Bulletproof vests, when I traveled to Yerushalayim, I still have it. A lot of people left. Not too many, but some did. No one blamed them. Each person makes their own choice. But for those who stayed, it wasn't just a decision to stay put because that's where your house is. It was an act of faith. It was a defiance. It was a repelling of what we were facing. My girl, I have Baruch Hashem, 8 children. She's my 6th child. She was born during the Intifada. We called her Tamima Emunah. Tamima, because the pregnancy was difficult, Baruch Hashem, as she came out healthy, she was Tamim. And Emunah. Because having children and bringing children into that world, into that reality, took Emunah. I do my business, Hashem, I'm sure you'll do your business. Who failed at that? Who says, you know, I can't bring children into this world because, you know, I got all these calculus and you may not turn out. Who knows that? A king? No, Menashe. Michizkiah didn't want to have children. Because he saw through prophecy that his grandchild would be Menashe. And what did the Navi tell him? Basically, you worry about your duties, Hashem worries about his duties. Don't start engaging in divine calculus. You have a chiyuv to have children, as many as you can, to raise them. Don't, Hashem has his cheshbonos. Amram, the father of Aaron and Moshe, separated from his wife. Raise children? Bear children? Rob? Feed them to crocodiles? I have to sit here and make crocodile food? What are you, crazy? Suffering, misery, nightmarish horror, and I'm bringing children into this cruel, cruel world? No way. And who called him to task? Who blew the whistle on him? Who knows who blew the whistle on him? Miriam. Oh yeah, that's going to bring us redemption. Throw up your hands and surrender. That's going to help. God redeems a person who first redeems himself. You redeem yourself, I promise you God will redeem you. And they gave birth to Moshe. Whenever I interview a boy for Gush, one of the questions I ask when the interview is, if you could climb into a time machine and visit any one period in Jewish history, where would you like to go back to? One period. You know what I would love to travel to? I'd love to travel to Poland, 1945. People walking out of those concentration camps, skin and bones, skeletons, and getting married, and raising families, and picking themselves up from that horror, and rebuilding. What the heck were they thinking? How could you raise children and rebuild families in such a nightmarish world? In a world gone awry. In an unthinkable horror. And look out to me. No! To 3 years later, the children they bore were marching into the promised land and bringing Mashiach for them. 3 years later, they didn't know it. What strength must it have taken? What principle? What courage? I know that they were building Mashiach. They did it! Still again. So Yirmiyah stands in Yerushalayim and Hashem tells him, buy land. And he says, land. So Yirmiyah turns to Hashem, source number one, and he says, basically, I'm a Navi. And don't give me this party line that I can't know your ways because you're the master of wisdom and the possessor of all secrets. That's Sefer Eov, guys. Sefer Eov is when a person suffers, though he's righteous, loses fame, loses family, loses resources, and his friends convene to visit him, and each one of them offers a philosophical view as to why God makes people suffer. And you know what the message of Eov is? You'll never know. Don't try. Don't try. Pick up a Tanakh over Shabbos and look at Perek Lamed Ches. God answers Eov from the storm. Where were you when I created the earth? Have you visited the abysses of the oceans? Have you scaled the tallest mountains? Have you scoured the space and the galaxies above? How dare you arrogate to yourself the presumption that you can crack the divine will? It is morally repugnant, intellectually dishonest to assume you could crack God's mystery. Don't try. So Yirmiyah says, I know. I know that. I got the concept. I'm an Avi. I know I can't understand you. I know I can't make sense. I know I can't decipher. But this is ridiculous. This is too much. The walls are crumbling. Poverty is raging. Pestilence is consuming our people. And you want me to purchase land? First, Belel Hashem, source number one, line two. Aha, Hashem Elokim, Hinei Atos, Hisa Shemayim Yisaretz, V'chachacha Gadol. Line number three, Gadol Eitza, the master of advice, V'rav Halilia, Hashem Nacha, Pekucha, Sarkol, Dark, Eben Adam, you see all and know all, blah, 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 I know. Hinei Asolos, Boa, Yim, Lachda, the Yenin, Abad, Akastim, the ramparts are built, the city walls are crumbling, fires are raging, people are dying. V'yata, Marta, three lines in the bottom, Hashem Elohim, Kinelecha, Sadeh, Bekesnev, right? And then you want me to buy land. Excuse me for saying this, and you read it and say it, but you know what I would say to someone? Say, what are you nuts? What are you high? Buy land? I'm tossing land into the garbage, tossing money into the garbage, tossing it down the pool. Now, what does God answer? Vayivra Hashem al Yirmi Yalimar Bron Hashem says Hinei Ani Hashem Okei Kol Basar Hami Meni Yipalei Kol Davar. Is there anything that's a mystery to me? You see ruin, I see regeneration. You see fire, I see rebirth. You see people suffering, I see people returning. You can't see what I see because your mind is trapped in time, and I live beyond time. One day we'll all be in a room together. And you know what we're going to say to each other? Mirat Hashem in that room in Olam Haba. We're going to say the following thing. We said, remember when we used to live in history? That 6,000 some odd thing called, yeah, remember that, yeah. It'll be like saying, remember what we did in 7th grade when we made some trouble? Yeah, the little thing we did that night. That's how quaint it will all feel. Because we'll be living forever. In the real world. In immortality. In eternity. And we'll think about that little thing called history that seems so large and so hard and so burdensome and so expensive. And you know what? It's just history. Nothing more. I eat history for breakfast. It's my main source of fiber. It's not eternity. Not immortality. It's just history. God tells Yirmiyahu, you're stuck in history. And I spin. And at that point, guys, HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates a password for Gula. You know what the password is? Pele. You can't understand it. You won't understand it. It defies logic. That's what makes it redemptive, guys. When I say the word redemption, we try to change our world as best we can to improve it. To spread religion, to build our people, to build the world. And when we can't, and when we fall up short, and when we fail, the Kaddish Baruch Hu comes and redeems it beyond our ability. The Kaddish Baruch Hu transcends human end. Of course we can't understand redemption. Of course we can't predict. That's what makes it redemptive. Redemption is a pella, by definition. That's what makes it apocalyptic. That's what makes it divine. Don't try to understand it. You kidding me? Last 60 years, more questions than answers. Why is Zionism secular? Why is it so slow? Why the terror? Why? Is that how I would have scripted it? Herzl? That wasn't my expectation. I expected the Chazon Ish. Ben-Gurion? I thought it would be the Chafetz Chaim. Secular Jews? You've seen this country. There ain't that much to write home about sometimes. Thought everyone would be tzaddikim and tired. You lived through the trauma 3 weeks ago. Why? Enough! Next Tisha B'Av, we're going to cry and shout and squeal more and more. What do you want, Ribbono Shel Olam? 2,000 years of suffering. 2,000 years of faith. 2,000 years of standing down the best they threw at us. And still you want more? 80% of Am Yisrael lost their faith in the wilderness of Galus. Not their fault. Had it beaten out of them. 20% are still at the finish line with their faith intact, and you still want more? I don't have answers, guys. But just because I have questions about redemption doesn't make it inauthentic or non-redemptive. It makes it more redemptive. Because I know something's afoot. Because redemption is not like reading a Shulchan Aruch. Halacha is very easy. You open up a Shulchan Aruch, what do I do, when do I do it, how much matzah do I eat, what's mukzah on Shabbos, how long should my tefillin be, and how large should my sukkah be. Siman Aleph, Sif Aleph. Siman Aleph, Sif Beis. Redemption isn't part of that rational mind. Redemption resides in the soul. Redemption resides in the imagination. That ability to be in touch with the Jews who have visited this planet, have marched with their Judaism intact, have stood for something, have defied their challenges. And you can't expect it to be rational. It isn't. Why? Answer. I mean, many people they call them why. Nothing is a why to Hashem. And all passwords have to be used more than once. By definition, that's why they're password. So Hashem reminds the second Navi of the password of Gilead. Second Navi, source number two, is Zechariah. And we're talking redemption, guys. If I target you trying to float us some sukkim from Yirmiyah, Zechariah is heavy apocalypse. Anyone here ever study Sefer Zechariah? Oh, that is pretty serious stuff. Visions, horsemen, candelabras in heaven, planets, all the classic good apocalyptic material. And let's read Zechariah's climax of apocalypse. Perek Ches, source number two. Oh, Yeshvu, Zekanim, Zekanos, Rechavos, Yushalayim. Old people will sit in Jerusalem, Yushalayim. The Ishmish Antobi Adome Rovia Mav, they'll be so old, they'll have to walk with a cane. Sounds interesting. The streets of Yerushalayim will be filled with kids scampering around, frolicking around, playing around. Guys, this is apocalypse. This is like normal, typical, routine scenes. They're the most natural thing. People grow old, they need canes. Kids run around the street. Kids don't like being quiet and walking quietly. This apocalypse? It's normal. It's typical. It's natural. You know the answer, Mordechai? Because what's normal for every single nation is apocalyptic for Jews. Because we're not normal. Because we don't operate under the norms of nature. It takes an apocalypse to bring this about, and we still don't have it after the apocalypse of 1948. There are still children in sterile that can't walk around freely because code red will strike and scuds or whatever, qassams will fall. And the last month, Jews can't walk quietly through the streets of Yerushalayim without being trampled by bulldozers, run amok by crazy Arabs. When I open the New York Times or any other newspaper, you know my first response? When I see the disproportionate anti-Semitism, front page news! Israeli soldiers clip the hairnail of a Palestinian terrorist. Oh, let's put him in jail. They hurt his fingernail. Page 10, 40,000 people are killed in riots in Sudan. Page 45, 200,000 Mexicans are murdered in some political development. But that fingernail that the Jewish soldiers accidentally hurt themselves, let's convene, let's condemn Israel in the UN. At first when I saw this, I was angry. Why are we so discriminated? Why don't they get it? Why are we being miscast as the aggressor? I have students who fought battles in streets and in apartment buildings, and 16 soldiers fell in Jenin. Because we didn't want to carpet bomb three apartment buildings housing terrorists. They were shooting for apartment buildings and churches and mosques. All the while Bush was bombing Afghanistan and Iraq to Kingdom Come. And we were painted as the aggressors. I was good and mad. You know my second response after my anger passed? I was sad. What was I sad for? I was sad for secular Jews. Because to me this all makes sense. We're not normal. It's a proof that we're different. It just corroborates what I know. It leaps out at me from the Nevi'im. Leaps out at me from the prophecies. It's so clear that this is what we should expect. Because we are not normal. We are different because Jerusalem, some stinky little country in the middle of nowhere, is the center of the earth, and every single Obama Barack visits because he knows that that's where his future lies. It makes perfect sense, guys. This is where it's coming down. This is where history is coming down. Not in New York, not in Beijing, not in the Olympics, not in Moscow, not in London. Here, right here, right now. Maybe not the next year, but the next period of history. But for secular Jews, for whom the Zionist state was just an excuse to find a quiet piece of land and stop the aggression, all secular Zionists wanted to do was to be normal. Anti-Semitism would conclude, they thought. Once we had our own land, we weren't guests, we weren't moving, it would end, we'd just be a normal. Let us just be normal. And no one lets them. I feel bad for them. I don't know how they handle it. I really don't. To me, it makes perfect sense, because it's not supposed to make sense. It makes sense. I'm expecting it to make sense. It makes sense. In some strange way. Kids playing in the streets. Walk by any park in LA, you'll see it. Walk by any park in Vancouver, you'll see it. And the streets of Yerushalayim, it takes an apocalypse to even bring part of it, not fully. My Rebbe Rav Amital told me that when he escaped the Holocaust, he learned in a yeshiva called Hebron, the Hebron yeshiva, which at that point was already in Givat Mordechai, very famous yeshiva. He lived in Givat Mordechai. He would walk every day to the yeshiva, and he would pass by a playground. And as he passed the playground, he would watch the kids playing on the monkey bars, on the gym, and he would sit there and cry for hours, just mesmerized, transfixed, and cry and cry and cry. And he couldn't move because those same eyes that had seen little Jewish kids gunned down in anonymous hills and anonymous graves in Europe now saw redemption being fulfilled. And listen to how Kodesh Baruch Hu summarizes. Ko Amar Hashem, source number 2, line 3. Ki Yipale Bein Esheris Amazad. Those remaining people who will live through Gula, the S'chus to live through Gula, will be shocked. Yipale! So Kodesh Baruch Hu says, I'll up the ante. Gam Be'ena Yipale. I'll be shocked. That's obviously an exaggeration to deliver a message. I'll be shocked. What is so shocking? What is so shocking? But Hashem is reminding Yirmiyah and reminding Zechariah. Here's your password. See, Benny? Source number 1, last line. Haimimeni Yipalei Kol Davar. Source number 2, Gamein Yipalei. Don't expect redemption to be logical. It won't. That is what makes it redemptive. And that, my friends, that, guys, is your first lesson about Gula. We'll try to appreciate it. We'll try to fillet it. We'll try to analyze it. We'll try to predict it. We'll try to savor it. We'll try to develop what our duty is. But it ain't the Shulchan Aruch. And that's why so many people have a hard time with it. There are two parts to your religion. One is Har Sinai. And one is Har Moriah. Make sure you stand at each mountain, or else you're halfway there. You're half a Jew. A complete Jew stands at both mountains. A lot of Jews out there standing just at Har Moriah. They've lost Har Sinai. They've lost mitzvahs. They've lost Torah. But they're still part of Har Moriah. They serve in our army. They live in this country. They build our future. Sadly, there are Jews that have no sense of Har Moriah either. No, we're not just living as we did in Europe. You don't just find a place to live. You live where you choose, but you live history. And living history in 2008 is a lot different than 1908 and a lot different than 1308. You want to be a complete Jew? Stand at both mountains. Follow both arcs. Answer every question when you get to Shemayim. Yeah, I learned Torah. Yeah, I was a good person. Yeah, I raised my family. And yeah, I was part of Jewish history. It was a live and compelling part of my identity. It's not just I happen to be a Jew and my religion is so-and-so. Part of my being a Jew is I come with a certain historical burden. It's a badge of honor, but it's a very, very heavy badge. And a lot of people just can't wear it and can't bear. Do you have the strength to wear that badge? That's what we're going to talk about over the next 2-3 weeks. Okay, guys? Hold on to your booklets. Shabbat Shalom. Everyone, before you leave...